Good morning. And if you're visiting Southminster for the first time, welcome. My name is Sandy Ruff, and I'm one of the elders on the worship committee. We're going to shake things up a little bit this morning, but I'll talk about that in a minute. So there you'll find a beige pad at the end of each row. Thanks, Marcy. Sign your name and pass it on down. That would be great. And then after worship, please join us in the Peterson Gallery for some coffee and treats. I've had many people ask me, you know, how today's service came about. Well, last spring, Craig Towers in our worship committee said at his wife's church, they had an all-women service that was prepared and led by women. I thought, okay. So we talked about it, and I thought, well, let's give this a go. So here we are today. One of our decisions was to have hymns that were either written, the text, or lyrics by women. And I thought, okay, now how am I going to go about finding out who, what hymns those are? And did you know in the back of the hymnal there's an index that has the authors and composers? So I thought, okay, I'm going to start looking for female names. Got that? And as I was, and I'd find a female name, I'd go to the hymn and I'd look it up. And down at the bottom, I don't know if any of you have ever noticed, there's a lot of information about the hymns. So that reminded me of my childhood, and it has nothing to do with hymns or churches. As a young gal, we'd go on road trips with my parents and stay in motels. And one of the things I liked to do was read the phone book. Yep. Read the phone book. And for you young folks in the audience, if you don't know what a phone book is, talk to your grandparents. But between the white pages and the yellow pages, there was a section that gave an awful lot of information about the city that you were in. Facts, the population, things to do, places to go. So, in my convoluted mind, a hymnal and a phone book are alike. And I'd like to thank our planning group for today. It was a coordinated effort between the worship committee and the women's retreat. And that's Marie Mann, Marcy Rao, Val Schultze, and Karen Wittenberg. And a special thank you to our three ladies that you're going to hear from a little bit later, Peg Tile, Kathy Huddleston, and Chris Muzon. And all of the gals in the choir and anybody else who's helped, a big thank you. After announcements and stewardship, Mary Lou Belknap Jones will lead us in our worship.
Does anybody know why we celebrate Halloween on October 31st? No? The night of the 31st, which is Halloween, and we know it as dressing up in costumes and getting candy and having fun, it used to be called, or still can be called, All Hallows' Eve. Do you know why it's called All Hallows' Eve? No? Well, the word hallow means holy, because it's the night before All Saints' Day on November 1st. And that's when churches celebrate the Feast of All Saints. And it's for all of the people who have died and are now with God in heaven. And the saints that we know, sometimes we hear of St. Francis or St. Peter, St. Paul. Sometimes we hear St. Patrick. Sometimes we hear Saint Valentine. But many, many, many people are considered saints. We're all considered saints because we are saints in the work is what we are. We're saints in the work. And when we do good things, we do great things, and we share all of that with others, we are saints in the making. So some of the people are members of our families who are saints or friends, but there are so many saints that we don't know all of their names. So on November 1st, the day after Halloween, is a really, really special day in the churches, and it is honoring all of the people who have died and are in heaven with God, and all of us who are saints in the making, so that we are doing good and hoping that others follow us. So I wanted to just do a little prayer before we go. So dear God, thank you for the beautiful fall days that you have given us and for our health and wellness of family and friends and our day here together. Amen. We wanted to sing a special song too, and I think most people know it. You gonna help me out?
Today's reading is from A Cup of Our Life, A Guide for Spiritual Growth by Joyce Rupp. A cup is a container for holding something. Whatever it holds has to eventually be emptied out so that something more can be put into it. I have learned that I cannot always expect my life to be full. There has to be some emptying, some pouring out, if I am to make room for the new. The spiritual journey is like that, a constant process of emptying and filling, of giving and receiving, of accepting and letting go. The cup has taught me many valuable lessons for my spiritual growth. I have learned that my life holds stale things that need to be discarded, and that sometimes my life feels as wounded as a broken cup. I have learned that I have flaws, chips, and stains, just as any well-used cup may have, but that these markings of a well-traveled life need not prevent me from being a valuable gift for others. I have learned that the contents of my life are meant to be constantly given and shared in a generous gesture of compassion, just as the main purpose of a cup is to have its contents given away. I have especially learned gratitude for all those moments when the unexpected has transformed my life into an abundance cup of blessings. Notice the rim on a cup. It is circular, with no beginning or end, a symbol of wholeness. In the circle, all is connected to form a oneness. The spiritual life is a journey toward becoming whole, a day-by-day movement of continually growing into the person we are meant to be. The cup's rim or circle daily reminds me of this longing for wholeness and connectedness.
Oh. I'd like to invite Peg Tayo, Kathy Huddleston, and Chris Musong to the front. These are the ladies that will be sharing their spiritual journey with us this morning. These ladies can be likened to the three generations of women at Southminster. Peg Tayo has been attending Southminster Church since 1961. Kathy Huddleston has been attending since 1999. And Chris Musong, the youngster in our group, has been attending since 2015. Our three panelists were given three questions to address. One, what drew you to Southminster? In what ways has your spirituality grown or changed? And what areas of inquiry and growth are you looking forward to in the future at Southminster? And if they so chose, they could address one of these questions. The blessings in life that you have received, which one means the most to you? And what helps you to be aware of and alert to your daily blessings?
First of all, I must tell you how I became a Presbyterian. The girls and I had gone to a Christian church in Seattle for about 3 years. We found it to be a very unfriendly church. When we moved to Seattle, we decided to go to the nearby Presbyterian church with the idea that if we found it unfriendly, we would seek another church. We did not leave our names, which now makes me wonder who was unfriendly. During the following week, I had a knock at my door, and lo and behold, it was Reverend Robitaille, the Presbyterian minister. He came in and we visited with one another for some time. As he left, he asked me the name of our next door neighbor. It turned out that they were the ones he was going to visit. Just got the wrong, or was it the right, house. When we moved to Beaverton in 1961, we started church searching and began with Southminster, agreeing that if no one spoke to us, we would check out another church. Thanks to Margaret Hillier, who not only talked to us, but invited the girls to attend the youth group that evening. We stayed, and during the ensuing years, our children were baptized and later married in the old sanctuary. Our two oldest grandchildren were baptized here. Madeline and Brian joined and still attend the Milwaukee Presbyterian Church. Marilyn attended one in Tacoma, but left it when the church was in total disagreement with General Assembly when they took their stand on homosexuality and taking the Bible literally. At this point, she changed churches. I don't believe that anyone's been attending Southminster longer than I have. However, there were about 3 years that Les and I lived in San Francisco, where I attended Lakeside Presbyterian Church. I was excited about returning to Southminster when we moved back to Beaverton, where many people welcomed me back. I was feeling a bit sorry for myself when no one invited me to join them for coffee or lunch. So I said to myself, you've been gone all of this time and they've managed without you. So if you want to become one of them, you are going to have to join in. I started attending Doug Ward's class. It was a great group of people, and he was a wonderful leader. It didn't take long for me to feel a part of things. After Doug's death, Alfonso Contreras began his group, Ponder This, until he became unable to lead it. We now have Sunday Starter led by Jeff. It is well worth getting to church an hour early. When we first came to Southminster, Reverend Wright was our pastor. Throughout the years, we've been blessed by having good leadership. Jerry Wright had quite a quiet manner about him. He also had a good sense of humor. He told me once he'd been visiting a woman in the hospital. When he asked if there was anything he could do for her, she said, "Yes. Tell me if you see anything on my windowsill." He told her that there was an Easter basket there. She heaved a sigh of relief and said, "Oh, thank goodness. I thought I was having hallucinations when a bunny came in and placed it there." Reverend Wright was followed by Jim Peterson and Peg Cobb and now John Chuck. Note that I'm not including the interns we've had, although I've learned from each of them. First of all, these are some of the things I learned from Jim. We are free to make choices. No one forces them upon us. At Housewife's Thing, he told us that when we started to clean a room, to stay in it until we were finished. That seemed to be something I think is a very good idea, but I can't seem to do it. He taught me how important listening can be, also important, how important talking can be, thus his listening hearing cards. On the night before our daughter passed away, after a 10-year struggle with the Hodgkin's disease, Jim asked me, "Wouldn't it be a relief if she dies now?" This made me not feel guilty when that was, in fact, the case. And from Peg, I learned how important it is for us to be involved in the community. It is not a good thing to attend church and forget that the community exists. We need to become involved. She was. That women pastors rank right up there with their men counterparts. I hate to admit it, but I didn't want Jim replaced with a woman. Another of those times that I found myself to be completely wrong. There are times I get tired of being wrong, but not with this. I like that she's joined our book reading club and has now become one of us, but a very special one. And from John, my first encounter with John was the morning that my husband died. B just happened to be at my house early that morning and called not only John, but each and all of our children. John came immediately and stayed with us for a long while. He was the glue that held us all together. He admonishes us to find our own God, as did both Jim and Peg, and to respect each other as they find theirs, who may differ from the one we have. All of our pastors have, of course, given us many sermons regarding the life of Jesus. I worship God and try to follow the example that Jesus taught us. And from Don, I don't believe that we've ever had anyone who was as good as he is with the youth of our church. He and Kathy have done wonders with our young people. When John had to leave because of his mother's death, Don took over the memorial service for Liz. Our family was comforted. That was 3 years ago. So here I am at the present, and this is what I know about Southminster. It is a loving and caring church. I consider it my church family. I will come home Sundays having been nurtured by the choir and the pastor. I know that since I don't drive, there are people who I'd feel free to ask to take me to church or to bring me home. Our Wednesday group, organized by Barbara Walker, is one of the highlights of my week, even or maybe especially those weeks when we just have conversation. In summing this up, I would say, thank you, Southminster, for the many ways that you have enriched my life since 1961 and will for the remaining years of my life. Thank you.
I want to kind of switch the order of the questions a tiny bit. I just want to say my spiritual upbringing, I grew up as a Methodist in Evanston, Illinois, and I was active in the MYF in high school, and I think that's the first really meaningful spiritual experience that I recall, because this was during the 60s, and we were very active in anti-war things, in civil rights, and it was this great forum of kids and adults, multi-generational, where we could really wrestle with all of the difficult issues of the day. And it also gave me a lot of independence from my family. My parents were very supportive. They were super supportive of MYF. She's at church, that's cool. But it gave me a place to be myself and to develop some beliefs and spiritual beliefs. When I went to college, I discovered anthropology. And to me, that was like a spiritual awakening, because I discovered cultural relativism and the idea that really there was just, it wasn't like we had to decide what way of thinking about things was the best way, but we could listen and try to understand different viewpoints in context of that lifestyle, of what that person was doing. And so I learned to listen to other people and to listen for those social relationships and what was making a meaningful life for someone else. And that was my major, and then I went on and I went to graduate school in cultural anthropology. At that time, I was not attending church. I think a lot of us were unchurched. But my mother, Carolyn Gregory, was very much of a spiritual seeker all my life. She was just razor focused on finding out what is the ultimate truth in the universe, and is there a God, and what is God, and what works spiritually, and all kinds of things. And I admit, I wasn't 100% on board with all of that inquiry. That wasn't my path at the time, but I was certainly influenced by it. And I remember in particular a couple of things. She experimented with Christian Science for a while, and I learned some things from hearing her talk about faith healing and Christian Science and being a sort of a prayer-based focus religion, A Course in Miracles, things like that. And then also, she attended a Unity church in the Evanston area for a while. And when I was in graduate school, I went to Unity with her for a while. And it was really different than the Methodist church, because its main focus was on sort of self-actualization and healing. There was emphasis on learning some of the buzzwords about psychology and things like that. And then it was a very loving thing, and loving church, and also very much respecting other religious traditions. So I liked the Unity Church quite well. Then I moved out west and went to graduate and moved to California and got married, met Scott down in Southern California, and we were not attending church. Scott is not a church person. although I think he's a good, really good person, and he does like Southminster, he loves all of you, but he's not a church attending person. But we kind of hit a wall because we experienced infertility. Really frustrating, long-term, it was unexplained infertility, which was particularly frustrating because I chased every medical possible treatment that you can imagine, and everyone thought that because my test results were always perfect, that it was definitely going to work. And for, I think, about 5 years, we did all kinds of things. And it really was a dark place because I wanted to be a mother more than anything. It meant more to me than my career. It meant more to me than anything. And I had these spiritual friends of mine and my mom and everybody who sort of felt like, this is when you really need to double down on all that spiritual believing. And if you can only get to the right place spiritually, maybe it'll work, you'll relax, whatever. And when you have unexplained infertility, of course, that's what the assumption is. So we just went through this really, really dark place, and I did not attend church, but I did struggle a lot spiritually during that time. Finally, something did work, and we have our daughter Karen, who a lot of you know, because she grew up here in the church. And I was also really active in support groups for that. So through that process and earlier processes, I learned that struggles like that really build your empathy. And probably empathy was the main spiritual value that I gained from that experience, together with anthropology, of really understanding that everybody goes through something. You don't know what it is, you don't know everybody's story initially, but you know that nobody's had an easy life, a perfectly smooth life, and the more struggles a person has, oftentimes the more understanding and empathy they have. So that was a really valuable situation. Now I'll come to what drew me to Southminster. Well, Karen was at We Wisdom in preschool, and I had not been in a church very much, but when I came and brought her every day to We Wisdom, I saw some brochures, and I looked at them, and it seemed to me that Southminster had a progressive theology, which was really important to me because of my cross-cultural interests and things like that. I definitely was not interested in a very judgmental type of theology. And so I decided to come and try it. My first Sunday here was the first Sunday after Jim Peterson retired. So can you imagine walking into Southminster, the whole congregation is pretty much in a state of grief. And also celebration of, wow, wasn't that the coolest sermon last week and the coolest service ever? And so it's kind of like, oh, well, I got here after the party. But that was also, for me, the best time to come because as somebody who isn't familiar with the culture here, I came in at a time when people were really wanting to talk about the culture and really wanting to define the culture. So I got involved in the mission study. And Ben Perolik, the interim pastor, asked me if I'd like to be on the mission study team. So I was, I think Larry Porter was on it. I can't remember who all we had, but it was terrific. And we did a survey of the congregation, and we did lots of different exercises. I think it lasted a year or so. And I felt like I got to listen to so many members and be taught by the Southminster tribe what this church was about. And I immediately signed up. I said, okay, this is for me. But I really loved that, and I loved the just participatory aspect. I also, some of the welcoming things I'll just mention, I loved the art show when I heard about that, because art and music really speak to me. And I also, there was a young group of families here then, Ray and Teresa Bunnage, I don't know if any of you remember them. They were here, Shark Heppner, Daphne Fisher, D. Wilson, there were a bunch of young families, and we used to go out to breakfast after church on Sundays with our kids. And then we also made a mom's group, and we did sort of like a Sunday school thing during the week, and sometimes did crafts and things, but that was a nice connection that we had. So that was kind of what tied me to Southminster further, besides just being fascinated by the people that I met here and listening to all of their reasons. What areas of inquiry or growth are you looking forward to in the future? I want to say I really appreciate Women's Retreat, which I think carries on the elements of self-reflection that I've always really enjoyed and found nurturing. I also like Southminster Reads and all the adult education programs, because that keeps me growing and thinking. And I also am really looking forward to us being and continuing to be a community that embraces diversity and works for social justice and on climate issues. I always enjoy other members of the community, and I look to them for inspiration and guidance. So, you know, that's why I'm here, that's why I stayed here, because every single person in this congregation has a unique and just incredibly important story. And over time, you have connections with various people and you learn their stories. And I have yet to find anyone that I don't relate to on some level, and I really appreciate the community. And I bet anybody could guess the blessings in life that I've received, which one means the most to me. It's my daughter, Karen, who, you know, means everything to me. So, thank you.
So what drew me and our family to this place? Last time Irene, my mother-in-law, was visiting, she's attends a Presbyterian church regularly when she's back home, and she really wanted to be able to do that for the time she was staying with us over the summer. So she'd been coming a few times, and I know Michael had been talking about folks he had met here for his own reasons earlier, and our family was really thinking and talking about the importance of having a place where we could bring our kids. Mike and I both grew up in religious traditions and regularly attended a community. And I really valued that, even though as an adult, I had come to kind of have a lot of resistance and questions and wondering if an organized place was really where I wanted to be, spoke to me. But we wanted a place where we could help our kids develop more of a social conscience, a place where they were embraced, similar to what I think we both had felt growing up. I also, you know, had known people in growing up that really embodied love and compassion. I'd seen that in people. So I thought, well, I'll come. I may need to hold my nose. You know, I wasn't really sure this was for me. I thought, I know that it's valuable for my family. So I came, and John was sharing his sermon that day. It was really raw and authentic, and there were no absolutes. He was talking about what had happened with his son and how that had affected his spiritual journey, and how it had, you know, kind of the questions that he had. A lot of that just really resonated with me. But the message that he left with, and that I would hear over and over again when I attended more, was we all belong. Like, we belong to this universe. We are connected. There is something that connects us. We are bound to each other. These messages, I think, I just hear often, and they speak to me. Another thing I hear often is we all have a place at the table, and I see that in action here over and over again. I see, I don't see kind of the hierarchy that I grew up with, and kind of left me feeling like if I couldn't follow a script, then maybe I didn't belong. But but rather, you know, I've seen women's voices and voices from other faiths and other traditions valued, and people of all colors, of all sexual orientations embraced, because we all belong. We're all connected. So I feel that here. I feel like this place has really embraced my family. I appreciate seeing women leadership here often, you know, like the in various forms, as well as men who are leaders and also who are gentle and loving and show, you know, a side of, are just willing to embrace both parts of themselves, I guess. So that's kind of what drew us here, and now I've found this is my sanctuary, especially as things happen outside the world and suffering is, you know, in the world is kind of deepening. I feel like this is always a place where I come back and I remember what my role is and how I can help. So the spiritual practice for myself
Your spirituality grown or changed since
yes.
you've been here?
Yes, okay. Well, so I didn't attend church really since I started college and then until about 3 or 4 years ago, and never really thought that I wanted to, but listened to other folks. One author and I believe Jesuit nun talked about, I heard a podcast, she was talking about compassion being a discipline, which I really liked. Because, you know, I'd seen people who could embody love and, you know, just kind of like radiate like well-being and compassion. I'd seen those people and I kind of thought, well, they have a really lucky temperament, right? Because I don't know that that's for me. I don't know that, like, I'm kind of reactive. I have a temper. Like, I want to be that person, but I don't always know, you know. I don't think it's something, a transformative thing that happens and you just are on the other side of it and then you are compassionate. I think what I've learned is that it's a practice. It's a muscle. You have to grow it. You have to do it daily. It doesn't always feel right. It doesn't feel natural. The more you do it, the more you have of it. So, something that I've learned and try to practice more, and I think that leads me to kind of what I want to explore more here, which is practices that are centering, right? That that are like meditation and prayer, things that help you not be so reactive, but learn how to respond so that you can respond with love and compassion, and be that person that embodies those things. But also, I hear a lot about the power of prayer. I think that's something I want to explore more, like how to do that so that it feels sincere and authentic to me, because I hear it used a lot. Well, for example, I have several people in my life who've said, you know, some version of, will you also pray for us? And that doesn't feel natural to me because I would rather be doing something tangible, right? I'd rather be getting the rice cooked or comforting them in person. I know that is powerful. I know people believe that. I think it's probably one of those things you have to practice a lot before you can feel that power. So that's something that I'm hoping to explore more here. And I think finally, how I get connected to my daily bread of blessings is something similar. I think I'm pretty aware of how lucky and blessed I and my family have been. We're healthy, or, you know, we have surrounded by good-hearted people. there's a lot of suffering in the world that I think is hard not to see. So I'm pretty aware on that level. But I think also just having a centering practice, again, that helps pull you back into that place where you can just really be calm enough to feel gratitude for the things that you know, for the blessings that are there. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, all three of you, for sharing your stories. And I think that, I don't know about you, but one thing that came through to me very clearly, that although all three of you joined Southminster at different points in our history, throughout all of your stories, it is clear that Southminster has been a sanctuary for spiritual growth and a home for love and friendship and acceptance. And I think we can all feel very satisfied that our church has provided that to all of you and to others to come. So thank you very much for sharing. And I'd like to close with a poem, Meditation by Juliana Casey. What if God is an old woman who wears purple and speaks her mind? What if God is an old woman who lets her heart be known, doesn't hide her grief, doesn't stint on love, and cries a lot? What if God is an old woman who is always pregnant, it seems, and outrageously, gloriously, grandly God? What if God is an old woman who is so old, so old, she knows from before, and young enough to make laughter? Is old woman God? And what if she looks like us? And what if the older we get, the more we look like her?